CHU Canada, temps universel coordonné, 0 heure, 1 minute.
0 hours, 1 minute.
Hi everyone. Today is UNESCO World Radio Day. So to mark the occasion, for the next hour, you're going to be listening to the Shortwave Transmissions Project by Cities in Memory. So at Cities in Memory, we've teamed up with the Shortwave Radio Archive, and we've pulled together more than 120 shortwave radio recordings that cover 8 decades of the history of radio. And each of them has been remixed or reimagined by artists all over the world. Shortwave radio, it's one of the most fascinating worlds of sound that we've got. It captures vital moments in world history, the thrill of pirate radio, clandestine radio stations, military radio stations, number stations, spy radio. All of humanity is out there to be listened to at the turn of a dial, and we've transformed these shortwave radio recordings into brand new compositions. This first recording you can hear now is of the time signal station CHU from Canada, as it captures the recording of a leap second. So this is what the original recording sounds like, and now you're going to hear a composition built from that recording made by Roberta Fedora, and it's called Ottawa Shortwave.
Thank you.
So next up, we're going to tune into United Nations Radio. This is a recording from the United Nations Security Council on January the 7th, 1980, and they're talking about the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. After you've heard an excerpt from that recording, you'll hear a composition built from it, made by Maury Newlands, called The Fragility of Détente. And in this piece, he talks about how the repeated accusations and pleas for peace by the Security Council inspired this track, ultimately ending the failed resolution for a Soviet withdrawal. But the underlying thread that comes through in the track is a sense of fuzziness and uncertainty. And through this piece, he wants to ask the question, where are we headed?
The overwhelming Soviet presence in Afghanistan is intended to be legitimate under the provisions of the Treaty of Friendship, Good Neighborliness, and Cooperation, signed in Moscow by the leaders of the two countries on the 5th of December 1978. It's been claimed that Soviet military assistance was requested under that treaty by the government of the Democratic Republic of Afghanistan, headed by Hafizullah Amin, who, as is well known, was executed during the Soviet occupation of the country. That flimsy excuse is entirely unacceptable, not only because it is irrational and illogical, but because the international community has not conferred, nor can it confer, any legal validity on interventionist provisions. Nor can the international community authorize the arbitrary use of armed forces in the territory of another state. The Soviet invasion of Afghanistan has aroused consternation and concern in today's world, Mr. President. The political cost of this wayward action by the Soviet Union to the government and the people of that great country is, in our opinion, incalculable.
These following broadcasts concern the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. Firstly, we hear an edited recording from the floor of the Security Council in New York. It was broadcast on January 7th, 1980 on 15,410 kilohertz and was due to begin at 20 hours GMT.
Remind you that we're standing by to bring you the proceedings of the United Nations Security Council, which is due at this hour to resume its debate on the situation in Afghanistan.
What has happened to the Helsinki Act of 1975 and the Declaration of Principles guiding international relations among participating states? Aggression, and that the military might of a great power, the Soviet Union, was necessary to rescue Afghanistan from its plight. Consequence of this warlike action has been a sudden intensification of the arms race with consequent frustration for all countries which cherish peace. Soviet action has not only dealt a mortal blow to detente, it has unnecessarily created a warlike mood in the world. May I conclude with a friendly appeal to the Soviet Union to give back to the world a climate of peace that we all yearn for. But for that to happen, there must be, without delay, agreement on the immediate withdrawal of Soviet troops who are now in Afghanistan.
Again, as in Vietnam and Cambodia, it is a story of lives lost, families separated, and hardship endured. We can only ask, in whose interests?
Where are we headed, sir? That's the question I'd like to ask.
All evidence suggests that the Soviet Union is deeply implicated in the coup d'etat of December 1979.
So that was The Fragility of Détente from Shortwave Transmissions, a project by Cities in Memory. You can hear all the pieces that are in this broadcast, as well as over 100 other pieces built from shortwave radio at citiesinmemory.com/shortwave. So next we're going to head off to Antarctica. There are recordings from all over the world in the project, and a few recordings from Antarctic stations. This recording is originally made in 1974 by the late Jim Haywood, based in New Jersey, and he had contact with KC4AAC of Palmer Station in Antarctica. And they have this wonderful conversation where they're kind of talking, the conversation moves towards the philosophical. They're talking about how they're both observing different aspects of the same world at the same time, both looking up at the same sky and listening to this. You know, this conversation has a kind of melancholy edge to it, especially when you consider that, you know, the radio operator who does most of the talking is now sadly no longer with us. So this composition called The Moon in Daylight is based on that recording, and it's intended to be a kind of floating introspective piece, as if you're tuning into the music of the spheres, picking up the movements of the earth from its most isolated corners and glimpsing private conversations that connected two men across the airwaves almost 50 years ago.
Okay, on the comet, I had sort of overlooked the fact that it is daylight now, and it's certainly too dim to see in daylight hours. We can't even see it in the night hours. I have seen the moon in daylight, as you will be seeing it now, and it sort of has a ghost-like appearance to it when you see it in daytime. I've seen the Southern Cross. I was down in New Zealand and in Australia a few years ago, and I agree with you. It sort of shakes you up when you look in the sky, and the constellations are so different. Up here, you look for the dippers, and that's about it. Down there, you see the Southern Cross, and it's It's quite a different looking sky. Of course, I guess a lot of people don't bother looking at it, but I do, especially when you're aboard ship and it's clear and the stars look so close you can reach up and touch them, just the way I do it here in Jackson, New Jersey.
thought I'd read a little story here, or a little, you might call it a fairy tale or something of that sort, to do with the Christmas spirit. It's called Alphonse and the Magic Christmas Tree. And this is from the December bulletin of Friendex, published by the North American Shortwave Association. And the address of this club is Post Office Box 8452, South Charleston, West Virginia, 25303 in the United States. And this is one of a series that NASWA carries in their bulletins called Loudenboomer Presents. And this is the story of Alphonse and the Magic Christmas Tree. A crystal clear starry night, looking down upon snow-covered landscape. Carolers making their neighborhood rounds. Everything was just as it should have been on that fateful Christmas Eve. Alphonse Humble, his wife and children, had, as was the custom in their family, waited until that night to decorate their Christmas tree. As they put the final touches on the perfectly shaped 6-foot tree, turned off all but the tree lights, and stepped back to admire it, they said, as they said every year, that it was the most beautiful tree they had ever had. Little Susie said it was so beautiful it must be a magic tree.
Thank you.
From a conversation in the Antarctic in 1974, we then moved on to a Christmas broadcast from December 1974 from the channel Speed X, which ran from 71 to 95. And that's a record of a Christmas story called Alphonse and the Magic Tree. The composition you heard based on that was by Kid Kim. It's called The War on Hugs, and he moved Christmas 1974, transposed it to Christmas 2021. He wanted to create a piece of music that made him feel like a child at Christmas, but those Christmases gone by before lockdowns, before COVID restrictions. Last Christmas, he could only see his parents very briefly. They weren't allowed to hug, so with this piece, he wanted to create a fantasy Christmas, both with his family and with Alphonse. One of the things you'll find throughout the Shortwave Transmissions project is lots of historical recordings of important news stories of the day. The next recording you'll hear is from 1986, and it's a BBC report about the Challenger space shuttle disaster. And it's inspired this piece by Christina Maris, which is called Robert H. Lawrence Jr., Trailblazing Astronaut, and it is all about Robert Henry Lawrence Jr., the first Afro-American astronaut, who is barely mentioned in all of the glorious celebrations of space. So this piece weaves together the Challenger disaster news story and the story of Robert Henry Lawrence Jr.
The American space shuttle Challenger blew up about a minute after being launched from Cape Canaveral in Florida yesterday. All seven crew on board are assumed to have been killed. Challenger exploded in a huge ball of fire as it arched towards orbit over the Atlantic about 10 miles above the Earth. Its rocket boosters were blown away from the spacecraft and veered off out of control. Fragments of debris rained down into the sea over an area about 9 miles from the launch site and prevented recovery ships and aircraft from approaching the scene for about an hour. Some wreckage was later discovered, but there was no evidence of any survivors. The disaster was the worst since manned space exploration began in 1961.
Who gets to determine who belongs where? And where is here? And why does it matter? Does here matter when you are floating, immersed in a weightless soup up in the air, between planets, where my human mind cannot possibly figure to comprehend the scale of it all? And yet,
the music business.
And yet, he was at the verge of space, my hero, who flew to the skies to never come back.
The American space shuttle Challenger exploded about a minute after it was launched yesterday, and all seven crew are assumed to have died. President Reagan said the United States was in mourning, but the space program would continue.
No, you've got it all wrong. Of my hero, I am certain you have never heard the name. Because if a people of a certain age remember exactly what they were doing when they heard the news of the Challenger exploding, with its cargo of human ingenuity, my hero, no one remembers.
Exploded in a huge ball of fire as it arched towards orbit over the Atlantic about 10 miles above the Earth. Its rocket boosters were blown away from the spacecraft and veered off out of control. Fragments of debris rained down into the sea.
He was a highly accomplished pilot with 2,500 flying hours, 2,000 in jets, and earned a PhD in physical chemistry from the Ohio State University in 1965, and he was the only selected astronaut with a doctorate. But Robert Henry Lawrence Jr. was also the first African-American astronaut selected for space travel. Robert Henry Lawrence Jr. was serving as instructor to another pilot who was practicing the steep descent glide technique, the same landing techniques that they later used in the space shuttle program. The student pilot flying the F-104 Starfighter supersonic jet at Edward Air Force Base in California made an approach to land but flared too late, causing the jet to crash. The pilot of the plane ejected successfully. By the time Robert Henry Lawrence Jr. ejected, the plane had rolled onto its side and was on fire. Robert Henry Lawrence Jr. was killed instantly. And this, you see, is the saddest of ironies, that my astronaut hero, America's first black astronaut, never left the Earth. And yet, I cannot but imagine his trailblazing figure transmuting into a cascade of color, a million fireworks illuminating and inhabiting liminal skies with all the dancing souls of all women, men, dogs, and apes who dispersed, pulverized, and evanesced in space.
Area about 9 miles from the launch site and prevented recovery ships and aircraft from approaching the scene for about an hour. Some wreckage was later discovered, but there was no evidence of its survival. The disaster was well.
And why does it matter?
And so now we're going back to CHU, the Canadian timekeeping station we heard at the top of the programme. This time it's a clip from 1993, and it's a piece by David Devereux called Potentialities. So he's taken the rhythm, the natural rhythm that comes from the timekeeping station, combined it with marching band samples, and created this really fun piece called Potentialities from that recording of CHU.
Canada, coordinated universal time, 4 hours, 52 minutes.
4 heures, 52 minutes.
Canada, coordinated universal time, 4 hours, 52 minutes.
4 heures, 52 minutes.
Next up, the year is 1990, it's September 26th. We are in Iraq, and this is a broadcast from shortwave radio station Radio Baghdad, around the time that, of course, the political situation was about to lead to the first Gulf War. So here's a recording from September 1990 for you to enjoy, followed by a composition called The Broadcasting Service of the Iraqi Republic by Rusty Sheriff. And he says that he really wanted to pick apart all the music hidden away in the background of this recording, cutting up various parts, looping them and affecting them to provide a basis for the rest of the track, bringing in the station IDs to become the name and reference point for the track, keeping in the long distance radio phasing effect and using that as an asset in the track rather than trying to hide it or fix it, and generally aiming for an effect somewhere in the region of the Chemical Brothers' Exit Planet Dust. And so this is the Broadcasting Service of the Iraqi Republic.
The trial will be public and pressmen will be invited to the courtroom, which can accommodate 900 people. Dear friends, a special report entitled The Bush Trial set for October 15, presented to you from Radio Baghdad, the Broadcasting Service of the Iraqi Republic. Broadcasting Service of the U.S. Republic.
For the next piece, we're going to stay in the Middle East, but we're going to bring you something that's entirely different from the last track. So this is going to be a recording from Saudi Arabia. So in the 1970s, Saudi Arabia obtained new transmitters and was widely heard testing transmissions on shortwave before going on air with full programming. Saudi Arabia is still, as of the 2010s, was still on the air on shortwave radio and was one of the last Middle Eastern countries still using this method of transmission on a widespread basis. So this piece is by Arvik Torrensson. Its name in Finnish means frequencies and tones, and it's based on the original sample from The Voice of Saudi Arabia that you're about to hear. And according to Arvik, shortwave radio has got lots of similarities with the creation of kind of ambient drone music and generative soundscapes. So using discrete frequencies, using harmonics, all of that kind of stuff, making use of the interference and static from the original track, noises that many might consider to be unwanted when listening to a radio. Very useful when it comes to creating ambient soundscapes. So lots of these have been sampled and used in this piece. They've also recreated a typical shortwave interval signal by using phase distortion tools to mimic shortwave fading signal degradation. So this is an ambient soundscape built from that original Saudi Arabian test transmission.
From 18 hours to 19:30 hours GMT on 25.20 meters. From 19 hours to 24 hours GMT on 48.94 meters.
You've been listening to a selection of tracks from the Shortwave Transmissions Project by Cities in Memory. You can hear all of these pieces and 100 or so others built from shortwave radio recordings all at citiesinmemory.com/shortwave. The last track you'll hear is a sample from propaganda station Radio Moscow from 1970. That's been reimagined by Tiger Mendoza. Now, he's taken loads of, he's created the drums, pads, bass, leads and so on by dropping samples from the recording and turning them into instruments, pulling out melodic sections from the ident, rearranging them in Ableton and really building this track from the original recording, and then overdubbing live drums and live guitar over the top of it. So there's some really interesting stuff going on here, and it's a great way to end the show.
The Soviet Foreign Minister, Mr. Andrei Gromyko, has said the Soviet-West-German talks in Moscow have ended in results summed up favorably by both sides. The Soviet government, he said, was convinced these results would serve to improve cooperation between the two countries and would promote European security. The West German Foreign Minister, Herr Scheel, said, before leaving Moscow, that he was convinced the agreement concluded would turn a new page in the relations between Federal Germany and the Soviet Union. The Gromyko-Scheel talks, which began on the 27th of last month, ended on Friday. They were concerned with the development of the relations between the two countries and resulted in the framing of a treaty between them, which was initialed on August 7th. In the Middle East, a temporary ceasefire has been agreed upon by the United Arab Republic and Israel. This is announced by the Foreign Ministry of the United Arab Republic. The Middle East News Agency says the 90-day ceasefire becomes effective at 10 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time Friday evening. Mr. Andrei Kirilenko, a Political Bureau member of the Central Committee of the Soviet Communist Party, and Mr. Boris Ponomarev, a Central Committee Secretary, met Mr. John Dolan, the General Secretary of the Communist Party of Great Britain, and Mr. John Tucker, the Party Chairman, who are in this country for a holiday. At their meeting, which took place in an atmosphere of friendship and mutual understanding, the leaders of the two parties had a frank exchange of views on the political problems of the world communist movement, the international situation, and other matters of mutual interest. Representatives of the communist parties of Venezuela and Colombia meeting in Caracas.
compromising their policies to Russian spending in the Middle East. The latest reaction on the release of the affirmative party and from Mr. Butters in the McGovern. Now the main topic of Mr. Johnson's news.